just going on to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome to Filthy Shambles, episode 36 of season 3. We basically went from one of the most efficient away wins of the season, away to Aston Villa. Okay, 10-man Aston Villa for a chunk of the game, 4-0 win, to probably the most non-eventful Spurs performance. And I say that in that Spurs offered very little, but hopefully Dan today will offer a bit more than what the Tottenham managed to muster up. And we can start on that, mate. Let's just dive into the mess that was Fulham away. It was,
yeah, mate.
It was like a collective disconnect. And we've spoken about this a few times this season, where we've had performances where the entire team haven't had that zest, that energy, that tenacity, intensity, whatever you want to label it with, it's kind of lacked. And I want your opinion on what you think it is, because I think it's a big old discussion, because you can be analytical and you can start looking at the tactics and the players being played. And I think sometimes, and it'll make for a boring podcast, but sometimes shit happens. It's just one of them games, one of those games where it just doesn't work. And in isolation, it's fine as long as it's not happening every week. But is it fine? Is there something more to it? Is it just a consequence of this very early phase one Ange Postecoglou team? I mean, we can go into the details of the game, because it was frustrating as fuck watching it, for obvious reasons. But do you have like a general opinion on why we dish out performances like this off the back of, you know, slapping Villa?
Yeah, I think I can have a bit of a better idea about it now, because now that you mention it, it isn't the first time that we've had like these sort of what the fuck performances. And that's what I called it at the weekend. It was a proper like head fuck of a performance. Like I just couldn't understand what I'd seen, because there was nothing from us. And it was genuinely like we were on a 5-game losing streak. Do you know what I mean? Like turning up expecting to lose, you know, like an out of form team that's just got no confidence. That's literally like how we were playing. Yeah. So I didn't, which we're not, are we? Like we've literally just beaten we've just comfortably beaten our main rival for the sort of Champions League places. And you'd think that you would be able to take that confidence into this game in the right way, to allow you to then get the win. Because Fulham have run a really good run recently, but then they are 12th. So there should be levels that should have been shown. And it's like they just showed us up massively. I thought they outfought us. I thought they played better football than us. And ultimately, I think they made our defending look really average as well. Because there was messy goals. There were goals that looked good on their part, but we just didn't cut anything out, and it was just a right mess of a performance. And I think we're a few times now this season where we've had some of these performances, it's typically been against teams that you'd expect us to beat. So like Wolves, Brighton, like Villa at home was probably, I don't think we knew then that it would have been the toughest of games. And then we came into Villa away thinking it would be really like a really tough game, and it turned out not really to be the case in the end of it. Yeah. Because we made it that way, because we were so much better than them. It wasn't a case of them underperforming, because we went 2-0 up when they had 11 men on the pitch. Like we just completely mentally beat them as well as like physically, you know?
Yeah, great.
And then Saturday, my gut instinct and my overriding instinct was, and I think Jamie Redknapp even said it, I think it was him that said it as well. And he doesn't say a lot of things that I agree with, but he did say afterwards that it was like we just had this, all he could think was that it was like this air of arrogance that we had coming into this game, that we just expect to win this. You know, like you expect to just turn up and be able to beat these teams. And I think as soon as you do that against any Premier League team, you're going to lose.
I wonder just on that, because this is why it's like a big discussion, and we're not going to spend like absolutely ages dissecting this, because
We could go and beat. We could go and play Luton at the end of the month and win 5-0, and well, then all of a sudden point. You forget about it, right?
Exactly. And this is, you know, we've spoken about this a few times. A lot of people have said this. You know, it'd be pretty pointless recording a podcast if we weren't going to pose some questions and try and work out the positives and the negatives, and just every week say, oh, it was just one of those performances. Thanks for tuning in and downloading. See you on the next one. You have to try and look for answers because it's what makes football so interesting, right? But on that kind of psychological sort of, if you want to go with Spurs being perhaps arrogant to a certain degree, turning up and thinking they're just going to win at a canter, I wonder what happens psychologically then as a collective, because as the game progressed and I was waiting to see whether I could catch a glimpse of something, it felt like every player just had this inability, this just had no capacity of composing themselves on the ball, running off the ball, passing the ball. Everything felt wrong. Everything felt like they were drunk. I mean, I think I didn't say much when I was watching the game, apart from at one point I just said, "You drunk pricks!" Like, because it just that's me sitting with like a
bottle of rum next to you.
It was literally a quadruple rum. It was a lot of rum. It was fucking lovely. Best thing about watching the game. But I kind of it made me think, oh, okay, we've lost. This was early on in the first half. I think even before Fulham scored. But my psychology was, now we're done. We're done here.
Because, really, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, this doesn't always happen. It's not like I'm the Oracle in the Matrix and I'm predicting what's going to happen at the start. Sometimes you just get this gut feeling that kind of goes straight up to your brain and it's like, we don't expect anything from this. And then I kind of lower my expectations to the point where I actually found Fulham's win inoffensive. I was like, you know what? Good on them. And you're right, Dan. They played with a bit of oomph, a bit of pace, a bit of urgency. They were direct. They weren't spectacular. They weren't doing anything. It's not like they tore Tottenham apart. And it wasn't a calamitous Spurs performance. This is probably why it's so difficult to digest results like this, because you're watching it and you're thinking, oh, who can I blame? What's happened? And it's like, it's just that kind of a Spurs performance where it's much ado about nothing. There was no cohesiveness and no bottle and no metal and all the other labels you want to chuck at teams. And it was weird because you did. There was a moment second half just before the second half kicked off, where I thought, well, this is where Spurs tend to wake up. And they did not muster a second half. Yeah, and that's why I thought, is it one of them? Is it one of those games? Is it just something that you can't quite tactically or psychologically put your... You can't really work it out. It's not a conundrum. It's not a puzzle. It's just an absolute off day that every football club has. Sometimes you get away with them and you win the games, and we've done that a few times this season. But I guess it's the whole narrative part, right? Because we're buzzing off the Villa result. I swear this was happening in a fair few Tottenham households. The old Texas Instrument, if anyone's old enough to remember that, it's a calculator. Doing the numbers and seeing, do you know what, if we win the next three games, because the mad thing is, we're literally, and by the way, I'm not saying we're going to win the league, absolutely not, but we were thinking about the capacity to go on a run and where that would put us. But the mad thing is, to kind of pull it all back, is that we're only like three wins away from the top of the table, like 11 points, which kind of shows you how weird and berserk football is, right? Because we're way off challenging for the title, yet we're not that far off from the top of the table. I'm not saying we're going to get there, but what I'm saying is there's not that much of a difference, and yet we seem to lose quite a few games, and we're not even at full pelt. And I guess that might be the frustrating thing about this season, that it's so close and the quality between the clubs at the top is so close that we should really find something within ourselves to capitalise on any given moment. Not not to achieve top four as a prize. I know Postecoglou fucking loses his shit when it's referenced as some kind of success. But in terms of the short term, it is definitely a step up. So it is a weird one. I mean, look, Fulham, to their credit, played really well. Like I said, they didn't do anything out of the ordinary in terms of their performance. They're obviously a team in good spirits. But what were you kind of plucking out? Because we have to talk about the game. We have to pick out some of the players. I mean, the biggest change is that Mickey van der Ven was injured and Radu came into the back. And he had a couple of moments. He's a little bit untidy. But like this guy hasn't played. He hasn't started the game.
And that's the first thing is that I think he's got to have a pass that guy. Like, it's his first start for the club, and he's had sparing minutes like since he's arrived, hasn't he? Because he arrived at a time when our two centre backs were literally coming back into fitness. And as soon as like Romero or van der Ven are fit, no one else is going to get in there. Anyone we might buy in the next sort of like summer, they're not going to start ahead of those two because they're class, right? Like, so that, and that's when you're talking levels of like how hard it is to then upgrade and what we've got. Like, we've got two real like gems there, right? But then like in terms of the rest of the team, I was caught in two places. Like, I was kind of caught. There was a particular chat I was in where I got sort of swept up in the argument around Bissouma, who I've got my own kind of opinions on both. From this season, it's been mainly positive. Like, I feel like I've been really patient with him this year because I was willing to wipe last year off because of the manager that we had in charge. And kind of how he was being treated and all that type of stuff. And then he had 10 amazing games at the start of this season. And then he had a few nothing games after a suspension. Then he got another suspension. And then he was away for AFCON. Then he's been back and not really done much. Had a really good game against Villa, I thought. Like, that was one of his best games he's had for a while. Then I thought he was back to his kind of reserved self against Fulham. And I get that a part of his game is down to the movement of, he is reliant upon the movement of others and stuff. But he's meant to be that rock in midfield. His position, that holding role, he's meant to be one of the rocks in midfield there alongside Sarr. And I just didn't feel, and he's not like, and Bissouma's not like a young up and coming player. He's meant to be an established Premier League player, given his age and everything. And I just thought, he should be the one grabbing the midfield there and trying to assert himself. And I felt that their midfielders did that. Like Paulinho and Lukic, who's like a fairly young player, right? Like, they just completely dominated that the midfield. There was a stark difference between theirs and ours. And I thought, that's the kind of thing where I feel like we need more consistency. Because if you look at the teams, because I don't think it's unfair to want to look at the teams above us and not say that we should have that now, because I appreciate we need to settle on what we've got and see where we can improve and have a bit of patience with it, right? Like, you're not going to go from 0 to 100 in one season. It's going to take a little while, and I completely get that. Like, this is a long-term project, and there's players who are going to come and go during that time, and you can't upgrade. It's really hard to upgrade certain positions and stuff. But I look at those midfield roles in particular. The teams above us, they've got players that you don't think about them having these sorts of games. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I'm talking like top level players here, so maybe it's a little bit of an unfair comparison, but I'm talking Rice at Arsenal, Rodri at Man City, and then Liverpool have got like two of them in McAllister and Endo when they play that role. Like, they're just seamless. They don't really tend to have bad games. And I think I don't think it's unfair for me to sit here and say that Bissouma has been good this season. But perhaps that will be a position that maybe Bergvall, when he comes in the summer, will be someone who will be looking to put a marker down for that sort of position. I don't know exactly where he'll be looking to play, because I don't know enough about him. But if you've got a player across a 38-game league season only really putting in 11 or 12 performances up to this point with 10 games left to go, so he obviously could still get another few good games in, obviously. But do you get what I'm trying to say? Like 11 or 12 games out of a 38-game season, mate, it's like, that's not consistent enough, is it?
I think we know what Basuma is capable of, and we've seen it. And you're right; it is a question. It is a question of consistency. You know, it's about whether he can own that midfield. And often, I do find myself sitting watching Tottenham and thinking, like, what kind of performance would these players put in if it was a Roy Keane in the middle of the pitch? Like, is it because we do have a team of leaders, right? And we do have a team now where there is, you know, we spoke about the collective letting us down, but there is a collective accountability. But the players play for each other, and it's empowering. We saw it under Pochettino. There was a spirit, and there was definitely a lot of zest in terms of players backing each other up. But it was almost like in this particular game, there wasn't anybody to galvanise them, and you're right. It wasn't Radu coming into defence that was problematic. It was the midfield's lack of authority. There was no studs on ball. There was no true, genuine leadership from the middle. There was no kind of the scruff of the neck type of, you know, guys, this is not working. We need to change the tempo here. To change the tempo, you need to get the fucking ball, and then you need to try and dictate it. Like, we were doing nothing to try and change the course of the game. It just felt like a bit of an exhibition game for Fulham. They probably thought, this is a bit easy. And I know maybe, like, looking back at the game, there were pockets when we came into it and we had a lot of the ball and we started creating chances. And again, I'm having flashbacks. There were one or two opportunities where you thought, oof, should have laid that off. Oh, God, you made the wrong decision with that pass. And we could have scored. And it takes one of those moments, you know, to then change the
course. Well, I mean, there was two, Spook, that were harder to miss. The Werner one and the Johnson one. They were easier to score those chances than
they
than
second
what they
half,
actually did.
Those chances
I think we were already 3-0 down by that point. Yeah. But we had chances in the first half as well,
yeah,
I think, didn't
I think
we?
That's what I'm flashing back to. The point stands, right? Because, like, you score a couple, I know it doesn't work like that, but if you score one or two late goals, it makes the, or as we know, it makes the last 10, 15 minutes very, very interesting. But I think the first half, it was a bit disjointed, but there was still something there, but it wasn't enough. And in the Premier League, like, if you're not ready, if you're not prepared to go toe-to-toe with the opponent, regardless of who the opponent is, then there's nothing. There's no excuse. You can't look back on the game and say, well, you know, if Kulusevski had done that in the first half, and it's irrelevant because you didn't do enough over the full 90. There was just nothing there that inspired me to kind of sit up properly on the sofa and think.
And they won't be able to afford to do that against Luton either, mate. Like, that performance doesn't get you a win against Luton either. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I mean, absolutely not. I mean, like, I'll tell you what.
Like, Luton, if we... No, go on, sorry.
No, go. We're probably going to say the same thing. You go first.
Yeah. Well, if I'm trying to read your mind, I was going to say, like, because Luton they've been a bit of a surprise this season, Luton, haven't they? So it's a bit like they've been really competitive against some of the bigger sides. Like, and they're in games that are like 3-2 and 2-0 and stuff, which is like they do have a lot of fight about them. So they won't come and just try and roll over against us, you know, and they'll give it a go. And it's like, if you then lose against Luton, then you really are fucking putting the pressure on yourselves from the fans and stuff like that. I think that's when some real kind of like worrying sort of like question marks will start to come in, because we're at the business end of the season now. Like, this is where the players have got to show what they're worth a little bit. Yeah. And I know that Ange will sort of say, and I do believe, I really love the stuff Ange is saying around the whole top four thing, and about it shouldn't be treated as a prize, and he'd be more than happy if we finished fifth, even if whether that gets us Champions League or not. But as long as we're then set up, if he believes we're then in a position to be set up to go again and improve next season, he'll be happy, and I will be as well. I really do believe that, and think that that's the right way to think about it. But at the same time, I do want to be in the fucking Champions League, and I felt that yesterday or Saturday we should have been level with Villa by the time they finished their game yesterday, because they drew, and we're not. We've still got a game in hand, but that game in hand should have been to go 3 points clear, not level. That was my thing.
And you're spot on. I mean, I was going to talk about how, I mean, it's ridiculous calling it a must-win game, but it's just a game that we need to be convincing in against Luton.
But we're running out of winnable ones. Sorry to interrupt, but it's because I think we're running out of winnable ones. Yeah, we've got a really hard,
brutal.
Like it's murderer's row, isn't it? Like that's all it is.
There's a lot to unpack from, you know, it's just to stay on the whole psychological aspect of expectation. And do you know what? Let's come back to it because we were talking about Basuma. Let's come back to it because there's probably quite a lot to talk about with that because I think there's something specifically that I want to say that's probably going to trigger people. So so we'll leave that momentarily. To go back to Basuma, yeah, he's a player that, you know, when he's on it, he's so influential and he can boss that midfield. And he's so important. And with Bentancourt struggling, as expected, you need someone to kind of stand up in that midfield, especially when you consider the options Spurs will have this time next season, midfield-wise. You'd want some of these players to step up and say, nah, that position is mine.
Exactly.
You want that position? Take it off me. Prove you are better than me. And why am I so good? Here's why. I'm going to boss the Fulham midfield and we're going to win 2-1 and take all 3 points. So you do need players to step up. And look, this is me as a football supporter, annoyed that none of them stepped up. No doubt, Ange Postecoglou is looking at them and having words with them, you know, the next day at Hotspur Way, or whenever they're training, to say that, what the fuck was that bullshit? Because it just felt like a waste of a game. It wasn't a waste of rum, but it was a waste of an opportunity. Regardless of the whole mathematical, if you win this and we do this and we win that, and then, you know, we can lose one of these games in April and it's going to be okay and blah blah blah. Being Spurs, we'll go into April, we're shaky, having a little bit of a wobble. And then upset the title race because we've got to play all three title contenders because that's what Spurs do. Like we turn and that again, you know, it isn't so much. Oh, it's like a positive Spursy thing that we do. We turn up against big teams. I think most big teams turn up against other big teams. Whether you think Spurs are big or not is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. We turn up to City when we play City. You know, we more or less turn up against Arsenal, and we more or less turn up against everyone else, to be fair. I'm not that worried about those games, believe it or not, as much as the arguably the teams we're playing have got a lot more at stake than we have.
Well, of course.
Do you know what I'm saying? So
well, those three teams are in a title race, aren't they? So.
Yeah, exactly. So there's an extra layer to what the expectations on them and whether they can handle it, et cetera, et cetera. So it's definitely interesting. We come back to the whole kind of narrative, if you want to call it that, which is the only word I tend to use for any given story arc in Tottenham season, because like there's always got to be some narrative in football. It can never be, chill out this season, guys. We're just building up towards something. Next season is when you really need to start questioning things if they're not going well, because that's given ample time. And even that, you could argue, what is ample time in modern football? It used to be four years for some managers, but managers don't last that long. They don't see out their contract, even if they have had success longer than 4 years on some occasions. So, like, football is a completely different animal these days, and it's, I think sometimes we panic too quickly. But I'm talking about the thing that I want to talk about later. To go back to the game, was there anyone else in the team that... was there anyone that played well, actually? Because I don't think...
I mean, from memory, I could be really wrong. I thought Kulusevski was probably the only one sort of remotely near trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's kind of it, though, isn't it? He just happened to feature in the game a bit more. He was on the ball a bit more. I thought Son was just literally anonymous, wasn't he? And you know, like Son's one of those people that I've criticised like time and time again or digged out, But I do it knowing that he's going to go and make me look like a fool in the next game, or even minutes later he can make me look foolish. Do you know what I mean? Because he's, they're the situations where you're happy to be proved wrong. But like, I'm so quick to do that. I've realised recently that I'm so quick to do that with players that I know what they're capable of. So then when I see that they're just doing things that just are just so below their level, it just makes you annoyed. Because you're just like, come on, do it now when it matters. That's all it is. But there was lots of players we could criticise from that game. Mate, none of them were good. Like, they were all rubbish, really, by standards. That's the long and short of it. No one really fancied it. And I get that. Yeah, I've said every podcast I've been on this season that it's a long term project. There does need to be patience. I've not shifted from that, but I still want to win games, and when I feel like it was an opportunity to really put the pressure on and kind of like still get, if you're not worried about top four, but you're still worried about finishing as high up the table as you want to be, that was still an opportunity to do that, you know? Like, it was an opportunity to get closer above Villa. So it's just really frustrating when those opportunities sort of like slip through your grasp.
Yeah. This is the thing, right? I mean, I'm sure other podcasts will delve into, I don't know, Saar trapping the ball or hitting the ball awkwardly or whatever detail they can try and muster up to justify their content. That isn't a dig, by the way. I'm just being playful. Or was it a dig? But my point is, I feel almost, I'm not exhausted, but like, what is the point in asking Spurs fans to listen to this and going through play by play the performance? Because there wasn't anything. You see, when Spurs do play disjointed football, we've seen it at home a few times this season where you kind of thought, like, what are we doing here? We look a little bit rough around the edges. We got a lot of the ball, but we're attacking. We're going down the same avenue every time. We're getting blocked. They're countering us. They're hitting us on the break. And there's things that you can really delve into and you can anchor to, like, is this a tactical thing? When are the subs going to be made? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a bit more meat on the bone to be able to chew on it. I don't know about that.
Well, the only thing that I can kind of say from the game was that Fulham obviously exploited the lack of space, the amount of space that would be vacated by the fullbacks in those channels, because we know that they venture inwards into the middle of the pitch. But which isn't new. We do that in every game, right? So because we know we leave those spaces vacant, we know that a lot of teams, if they can, are going to try and get the ball wide and swing crosses in because that's where the space is. It's just that we normally seem to be able to deal with it. Do you know what I mean? So like when you then see us get carved open time and time again with the same type of attack, you're sort of just wondering, like, what is missing here? Like, who's not switched on? So are we saying that the fullbacks were probably most culpable there, or should the centre-backs have been doing more?
Like, here's two questions for you. The first, Destiny. Is he all right? Is he carrying the knock? Is there something wrong with him? He likes a little jog back. He's not, I don't know. This is probably a WhatsApp-influenced piece of insight, but I did know after it was being discussed, I did kind of kept my eye on him, did kind of a player cam, and I was like, okay. But is this also part of the collective, whatever the fuck that was against Fulham, and that everybody arguably looked a little bit off?
Yeah, was everyone jogging back, yeah, like not just him type of thing?
So maybe it's unfair of me to kind of single out Destiny, because again, it's this expectation thing that you have on players. The other thing is, and I've not actually read this, I just... just like literally moments before I set up, I saw an email and there was, or maybe it was a notification on my phone, and it said something like, is Ange Postecoglou tactically flexible? It was something worded similar to that sentence.
Right, okay.
And it's this thing when Spurs, you know, because of the whole Ange ball thing, because of the hype and the sound bites and the rest of the fanfare around the type of football Postecoglou plays. I think we've spoken about this before for sure. I think he, as a manager and as a tactician, I think it's dumbed down as if all he's telling his players to do is go out there, play for 90 minutes, keep on running, and it will come good. And it's not that dumbed down. That's not what we're doing out there. This is not run around a bit, Harry Redknapp style. And even Redknapp, bless him, at Spurs, the agenda with him was the same. It's like the football's really basic football and you're just getting away with it because the players are decent. And I think that's a really lazy way of looking at football and a really lazy way of trying to be analytical. But this keeps coming up. It's okay when Spurs are slapping teams and playing well and not losing. There's no discussion around tactics and flexibility and changing the game and whatever. But obviously, the moment we have a poor result, it's like, well, hold on a minute. Let's just settle back about Postecoglou, because this single game of football tells us more than maybe all the victories that we've had, remembering that we are 3.5 games off the top of the table, considering we are in transition and we have got a lot of work to do. Even Postecoglou keeps saying we need another summer's window, and no doubt we need one or two players to maybe lose that kind of inner arrogance and step up a bit. And to do that, you need more players to come in for there to be competition in places. But where do you sit with Ange? Are you, again, I'm not encouraging you to say anything if you've got no criticisms, but are there little red flags, maybe not red, but just little kind of, let's see how this is going to pan out between now and the end of the season, with a bit of pressure, but also, more importantly, next season? Is there anything that you're kind of scribbling down and making a note of in prep?
No, it's not. I don't have any question marks from like a tactical perspective. I've got full faith that I think he knows what he's doing. I do think there's a lot more nuance in football tactics than we probably, as fans, give managers credit for, obviously, because we're all experts, you know. And then, like, I think that there's definitely been times this season where we've not quite really understood, where we've sort of like questioned it a bit more at the start of the season, haven't we? When there's games that have just been like, you know, did we kind of get lucky there when we've done like a 2-1 at home against Everton or something like that? But I didn't really have any of those sort of worries. I didn't think yesterday was about Saturday was about Postecoglou at all. I thought it was just, I just think there was just sheer lack of intensity that you just can't.
But is that not the manager? Like, is this one of these things that it happens and then the manager?
Yeah, I mean that's
works
fair.
Out
I think
why it happened and then obviously we avoid, because the thing is, to go back to what we said, we've kind of seen moments where we haven't played to the intensity we expect them to. But is that also because they're not coping with doing it as often? That's really bad grammatical English, but is it because of the lack of games, and or is it because of the training sessions and that intensity has taken a little bit out of the players, considering the changes we have gone through in the last couple of seasons, and that we get to the point where we are consistent with the intensity, whereas at the minute we just have off days now and again, which are really critical unless it happens every week.
Well, next season's going to be really telling, because he said multiple times that he'd rather be playing more games, hasn't he? He's been saying for the last few weeks, whenever he's asked, he's repeatedly said, I would much rather have a game on a Wednesday or a Thursday than not play. I would rather be playing more games and be in more competition, right? So if we get into next season and we're either going to see something totally different and we're more ready for the weekends because we have had those midweek games, or we're going to see what we've seen under multiple managers in the past, where we have a Thursday night or a Wednesday night game and we look lackluster at the weekend because of the midweek game, you know? I don't know if you can then put that down to being an Ange thing or not, because that happens with every bloody manager. Like, every time we play in Europa League or Champions League, like, the performances aren't always up to scratch at the weekend. I think the only thing I was maybe being critical of Ange for on Saturday was, and I don't know what your thoughts on this, but there was nothing from that first half that made me think we could just send that same 11 back out and expect an improvement. And I know that that's easy to say because we have done that and we've come into second halves and we've put in better performances and stuff, but we've also seen, like, I just would have expected to see change and change earlier as well. I don't know if we changed anything until it got to 3-0. And I just thought, surely we need to be more reactive there.
Yeah, like, I actually thought the first half was so... Okay, maybe it wasn't dead, and maybe this is what Postecoglou saw. Maybe Postecoglou saw enough in the first half to think that we could do something. But once again, the opposition came out sharper. And, you know, Fulham started the game sharper, and they started the second half sharper. And it's a question around, why can't we come running out the blocks quickly? So I think maybe he trusted them to do that, and they didn't. But I think it would have sent a pretty strong message, easy enough to say with hindsight, to have made those changes at halftime, as if to say you just weren't good enough. You didn't do it in the first 45. Where's the proof? Where's the evidence? You're going to do it in the second half. You're coming off. You're getting replaced. But I don't know. You know, it's easy for us to question, and a lot of people question substitutions. Like, well, why'd you bring him on, mate? He fucking knows why he's bringing a player on in that moment. You know, it's just because it hasn't happened earlier in the game. You'd probably moan if it happened earlier in the game. On this occasion, though, it was probably justified to make a statement substitution. But, you know, again, it could be a case of, I gave you that second half and you did not bring it. You didn't up your game. And like, maybe there's a learning curve that we don't have access to it. You know, we don't know what gets said in dressing rooms after.
Do you think
we don't know what gets said in the tactical room back at Hotspur Way? We can have a little guess, but maybe it builds up over time. And for us, we want a reaction immediately. We want the output immediately because we're impatient, because that's just the way football is. You want your team to do well. You want to win.
Do you think there is an element of whilst he'll always maintain in the public eye that, you know, in like the press conferences and stuff, that we want to try and finish as high as we can, so we're not going to stop until the season's over type of thing, which is great. But do you think that he probably knows that winning the league, let's say, is really unrealistic at this point? So he's using this season. The job this season has always been to work with what he's got and see what improvements we then really need to make for next season to go again, right? So if he's then looking at that game on Saturday and probably thinks, right, well, I can change it now, but I want to see a bit more from what these guys have got. Have they got it in them to dig out a result in this game now? And the fact that it got worse, is it almost a case where he maybe confirmed some thoughts that he thought he needed to? But like, so whether he's looking at individual players or if he's looking at a team performance, does it give him more to work on by seeing that rather than changing it up and not seeing what could have happened?
But Dan, this is exactly it. This is the nuance. It's not even a nuance. It's such an obvious thing in terms of rebuilding a team or trying to get something new out of a group of players and adding new players to the squad and evolving and changing methodologies and science and all the rest of it while still acquiring new players and changing the philosophy and the academy and the way that we promote youth players. Like, all these things are kind of lost in that desperation to, we've got to finish top four, and if we don't finish top four, Levy out and all the okay, look, we can all have our opinions about A. But let's just focus on like, we can all have our opinions politically. And I'm not just talking about, that wasn't a dig at people that want Daniel Levy out. I'd love a change in chairman. Ain't going to happen anytime soon. Mm. And even if it did happen, what consequence does that have on the team and what we're going through at the minute? Like, in terms of what, you're going to throw more money at it and that's how you're going to fix everything. And that's how you're going to win everything, by just chucking more money on top of all the money that we've already spent. The political aspect of football is irrelevant in the moment, and that includes this desperation for instant success. It's probably why we keep stumbling. It's why the club appointed Mourinho and then Conte, because I'll tell you something about the board. They don't know anything about football. They're disconnected from football.
Mm.
And they probably do, on occasions, listen to what the fan base say and want and think, let's be reactive. I don't think that. Subconsciously, they're being reactive. Let's bring in a must-win manager, a win-now manager, a serial winner, to win something, to just say, here you go. And it plays into what Postecoglou was saying. If we had won the League Cup under Mourinho, how would that have changed anything? It would have been great to win a cup, but it's no different to a mid-tier team or a lower league team winning a cup.
But do you know what would have happened as well? Exactly that, Spoo. Like, do you know what would have happened as well if we'd have won that cup? All the people, like, it wouldn't have got rid of the trophy banter because United won that trophy and under Ten Hag, and they might win the fucking FA Cup now as well under Ten Hag this season as well. But then with the United narrative, that gets turned into United are back, can they build for next season? But under Spurs, that would have, if Spurs had done that, it would have just been, it's only the League Cup. What have they done since then? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's 100%, which kind of proves 100%. Your point.
I think what Postecoglou is saying is that if we're winning something on the way to what we're trying to achieve, then that's fine. That's part of it, and it's an important step. It's incredibly important. Because you kind of consolidate that winning mentality and say, well, look, we held it together over X amount of games and went on a cup run and won the cup and under pressure in the final, beat the opposition and we won something. And that's amazing. Winning anything at any stage is amazing. I'm not downplaying it. But in the grand scheme of things, what this club has lacked is an actual blueprint, an actual a development journey to be able to get to a level where we can compete all of the time and not have to swap manager all of the time. And I know, I don't want to reference the cartoon pundits, and there's a lot of cartoon pundits at Tottenham who are very reactionary, who will just say another season without winning anything, Postecoglou, I don't trust him, I think he's the wrong man. Right, so you want to basically flip the manager every 8-9 months. You just want to get rid of the manager, reset, start again until you eventually strike gold. This is why I can't be bothered with social media and Twitter anymore, because yeah, there are people that have opinions that are worth debating and discussing, but so much of it is noise. And it's interesting, because like Adam Nathan was at Fulham. He was at in the away end.
Yeah, yeah.
He chatted to us, right? He sent a little voice message on the chat, and he was basically saying that, I know there was an incident with a banner. I don't know enough about it, so I can't comment about it. I mean, pulling a banner off any football supporter is a fucking stupid thing to do. Like, it's not, you don't own that space, and you definitely do not own their opinions and their thoughts. Like,
well, the banner was saying save our seniors. So why do you want to pull it down anyway? It's fucking stupid.
I don't know why people.
I didn't know that happened. By the way, did it get pulled down then by someone?
I think they pulled it off Martin and some. I think it was Martin that was holding it.
Right.
Or maybe it was just. See, I don't know enough about it. Maybe because I'm not on Twitter.
Right. Fair. So, yeah.
But it got pulled off, and it might have got ripped up. I'm not sure. And there's a bit of a kind of abuse kind of dashed in people's faces and the rest of it.
Yeah,
I don't know
yeah.
what these people, I mean, who are these people? But I think, I do know, I think, because I saw the quote, that Martin had a dig at someone, but I don't know who he was aiming that dig at. So I don't know the context. So that's why I don't really want to talk about it unless, I don't know if Martin's going to listen to this, he can reach out. But on
what Adam was saying, he was saying that he felt fairly relaxed, didn't he? And that it seemed to be a general acceptance amongst the fans that were there.
This is his quote. He said, fans are relatively accepting games like this when the general pathway is correct. So what he's saying is that Spurs were pissed off, and maybe it's Fulham away. Don't really have to travel far to get home. It's a good away day. It's a fucking really good away day. The pubs around Craven Cottage in that part of the world. But the Spurs fans were not, they weren't singing sack the board or get rid of Ange Postecoglou or abusing the players, because we know there's going to be bumps in the road. And I think it's, if you ever want a snapshot of the fan base, take a look at the away supporters, who are the ones that spend a lot of money to travel up and down the country or across London. And they're chilled. I mean, you can't not be chilled, right? You're getting 3-0. You know, it's almost like, and it's not like a defeatist, same old Tottenham. Sometimes you just get walloped and you just have to, it's not great. It's not fun. It's often not acceptable. And it's all of those things. But it's also, well, what are we doing as a football club? Regardless of what you think of the chairman and all the other bods in that boardroom, we are doing things properly for once. Whether they back Postecoglou over 4 years, we will have to wait and see. Can't predict the future. But we know with Postecoglou, at the minute, he's he says the right thing. He talks about the right thing. The football, when it's good, it's very good. And we've seen teasers of how good it can be, but we just need more. And if you look back, really, like to previous managers, there's no direction. There's nothing to hold on to, which I think is it's what Adam was basically alluding to. That there was and I guess there's a level of expectation and demand on games, right? Mm. That become unrealistic. I think that's what Adam said. Sorry, Adam, if I'm butchering.
No, but I think Adam's right, and I think I fall very much within that same feeling as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, as we were chatting, it's like I'm fully on board with that sentiment, because that's what I feel I've been championing throughout the whole season from the start, you know, since Ange came in, that it's all going to take time. It isn't enough. If we don't achieve anything this season, it won't be a surprise. I think we'll see better football. And I think all of those things have happened. I've not once sort of either thought, you know, nor people I know have like thought we need to flip on the board. We need to flip on the manager. Like, I think my thing was that I was really annoyed, and I thought that within the context of that game, I just wanted to feel like it's okay to be really annoyed with that game, and was almost felt, and I felt like a little bit maybe it's a case where I shouldn't, but then it's like what other people do for other games. Do you know what I mean? I think that was just the only little internal battle I was having in that sense. I weren't at any stage sort of like getting fussed about the board and the manager and stuff like that. It's not even what I was talking about. I was talking about the fucking players who didn't do what they were supposed to do.
The reason I mentioned that is because even though I'm not on social media, I keep saying it. I'm not just trying to make a big deal out of it. It's a million times before.
And I'm not really either, mate. Do you understand? I'm not fueled by that. Like, that was it was internally fueled, everything I was saying. It wasn't from anywhere else. I think that's just what's worth saying, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I think there are fans that will always pull the conversation and the debate into a different direction. Like make it about how they feel about Spurs, and in a very extreme way. Like, you can't... I just think it's the wrong way to follow football is to hate your football club. At every level. Like, how much energy does that take out of you? How much obsessive bile are you full of to constantly hate everything, every step? And like, you're almost like waiting for Tottenham to trip up to point the finger at blame. And I think it's just a legacy thing. Like, I am disconnected, and it's great, and it's interesting because I'm not seeing what other people are talking about. I mean, I can't control the WhatsApp groups. You know, certain people calling Postecoglou fat every time we lose a game. It's not fun, but I'll allow that banter. He knows who he is.
We know who they are.
But what I wanted to connect this conversation to something that I've been kind of sort of teasing all the way through. It's nothing majorly insightful, but I think it's interesting that, like, for me, I really see patience often as a refinement tool for Spurs in this instance. But I think it gets weaponized by modern football, because it's like, oh, Spurs lost a game. Oh, they've lost a couple. Oh, they're not going to get top four. That's a failure. And it's like, well, and this is whether you're Spurs or whether you're a media pundit or a journalist or whatever, what is it you actually want? Do you want to play on the emotions? Do you want to use anger as the economy for your word count and for your clickbait and discussion points? Or do you want to look at it properly and actually think, this is going to take a little bit longer, and some fans will bang on about 20 years I've been waiting. Well, that's bullshit, because we've had some fucking good teams in the last 20 years, and we've come very close. We've knocked on the door several times. And that had nothing to do with chairman and outside shit. It's just us on the day not turning up and not performing. So, by the consequence of... Well, context, rather, not consequence. The context of the matter is that Spurs have to build themselves up to be a serious football team. And we haven't been that. Unfortunately, we've been a team that's tried to shortcut our way since Pochettino's tenure fell apart. We haven't done anything. And it's scandalous. Like, Levy really shows himself up as someone who doesn't really get football in a ruthless, cutthroat way. Like, how can I fix this problem? How can I get the team? How can we do what Liverpool did? How can we, like, have that energy rather than, ah, it's all guys, everything's going to be... It's the wrong type of energy if you really want to succeed. And obviously, those are the question marks I have on the chairman, believe it or not. You know? I've always felt like that. I've not got abusive with it like other people because I guess I'm different. Maybe I'm old. Maybe I'm tired. I don't have that energy anymore.
But we're not the same age, Spook, and I've got the same sort of opinion as you. You know, like, I don't want to make this about Daniel Levy, but he's made it just abundantly clear that he doesn't care about the success of the football team outside of how much does it make us a commercial success, you know, and what it does for him in terms of his profile and that type of stuff. I do think he's a bit egotistical in that way. And I don't think that he cares about the success in the same way that maybe the Liverpool owners do, because just to continue that comparison, because you brought it up, because they obviously wanted to do what was necessary to make that team successful, still within their means, you know, like they sold to buy, similar to what we do. But if we end up getting success, it's going to be fuck all to do with him. It's going to be to do with what the manager and the players can do, because unfortunately, we can't rely on him to having to sort of do anything.
Here's the thing, mate. We're going to continue this on Patreon, but I just wanted to say this now. Look, we don't need to be having this conversation either. Do you get what I'm saying?
No, of course. I completely agree.
It's one of these things about football. There's nothing wrong with having this conversation. There's nothing wrong with being reactionary, because, again, it would make the talks in the pub, the talks after the game in the stadium, and these talks on a podcast completely redundant if we didn't kind of just go back to certain things that are part of being a Tottenham supporter. I genuinely think that because of the type of football club that we are, that we're kind of stuck in, we are in purgatory, right? Below the very top tier of English football clubs in the Premier League and above everybody else. And we've been there for a very long time. And for some reason, we don't get applauded for it. We get belittled for it outside of the club and within the club by our own supporters. Like, it's a failure to be trying to achieve some kind of success, which is mental. And I think because of that story, because it's almost biblical, right? We're just walking around and never quite getting there. Like, I think that as a fan base, we don't have the capacity to handle pressure. And I think we have the ambition that drives everything. We've got that behind us, but I think it breaks us in the process. And on that bombshell, hold on.
I was just going to say, I've got a positive note that we could actually probably end on there around Ange. There's been stuff being said about
him. You stole my bombshell, mate, but go on.
But it's going to be, I'm so sorry, but I do think it's for a good reason. Because when you talk about Ange as well, and you've been looking at the stuff that's come out of him recently, and you've got people, is it Simon Davis, I want to say, the academy coach?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he used to work at United when Ferguson was there as well. And he drew the comparison between Ange and Fergie in terms of he's not coming in just to change the team. He's coming in to change the culture of the club. And that's obviously not done overnight. And I think we're starting to see signs of these things being done little by little. And I was talking about it in a chat with someone, and we were very much agreed on that point, that we think that he knows that the environment's been quite nice for a lot of people at Spurs for a while. Like, it's a nice ground, nice fans, nice wages, nice area to live in. Relatively speaking, no expectations, easy life was kind of what gets aimed at our players more often than not. And all I said was he's definitely aware. And if you listen to pretty much everything he said this season, it's about introducing standards, working out who can live up to those standards and bringing in people who can uphold them, all whilst drop kicking every fucker who doesn't fall into these categories out of the club. And that's it. Yeah. I think that's basically it.
Yeah, and on that bombshell, we're going to continue this chat on Patreon, and you can find that on patreon.com/spookingpurgatory. If you want to give me a sub and support what I do, then that's great. And if you don't, you can just download this podcast for free every week on your favourite podcast app. But if you do give me a sub and you do back me, you do support me, you get the extra bit of content that you're not going to listen to now. Laters.